And welcome to Documenta and Son, being the adventures of a dad who's gay and a son who is figuring shit out. My name is Documenta Barbarism,
destroyer of worlds.
And I'm Dingle Mary, a surrealist painting on legs.
Hi, Dingle.
Hi, Documenta. I almost forgot your name.
I am your father. That is rude. Sorry that dinner was undercooked.
Dinner was undercooked and I ate too little.
Which is a shame because it would have been really good. It was drumsticks and potatoes and cabbage.
Yeah.
In the crock pot, it was nice. Some onions, some juices.
The chicken was stellar, but the potatoes and the cabbage was just a bit too crunch. A bit too crunchy.
A bit too crunch. Is that
It's the new internet word. You're so crunchy.
That is so crunch.
Stop trying to make crunch a thing.
So, we are here, gathered here, Documenta and Son, talking about gay shit, I guess.
Yay!
I don't know. We're figuring things out as we go. So we welcome you and we thank you for joining us on this little journey. We have already recorded a test episode.
We don't talk about the test episode.
we may use it as bonus content at some point in the future. It was...
If you're in the future, subscribe to our Patreon.
Yes. Hi, future.
Hi, hello.
What are these flying cars doing? Quit screaming into our poor listeners' ears. We're doing the best we can, and that's all we can ask of ourselves, I guess. So we are going to, I thought we might play a little game just to sort of get ourselves warmed up, get the juices flowing, you know, invoke some gayness.
I'm always happy when my juices are flowing.
I'm not. Your juices should not be flowing. I don't want any juices flowing until you're like 37, full grown. Only then will I consider flowing of juices. Okay, anyway, we are going to play.
I think we're talking about different juices. I was just talking about, like, apple juice with my lunch.
We are going to play Pride Parade Mad Libs.
Great.
I will go first, I think.
Okay. Tea, timeout. Should we, like...
No, we're not doing timeouts.
I know. What? I'm just curious about how much we should reference the test episode, or if that was it.
What is there to reference?
I don't know. It's just that we did Drag Race Mad Libs.
Well, if you want to say something, say something.
Okay.
We're not teeing. We're not timing out, because then it throws off the time and stuff.
Okay? And also, anyways, you're rustling paper, so it's fine.
It doesn't matter. If I'm, like, flipping through and I'm saying, like, see which one should we do, then that's okay.
Okay.
Timeouts do not exist.
Okay.
Or I would have called many already, because it's all awkward and weird, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's do this one. Why not? Okay. Exclamation.
Shit.
Figures. Plural noun.
Fucks.
Nope.
Well, yeah, like, I have no fucks to give.
No, I know it works, technically works, but I'm pretty sure your mother is going to be listening to this podcast.
Well, I wish you would have told me that from the beginning. Water bottles.
Water bottles. That is lovely. And actually might even work.
Ooh.
Type of liquid.
Okay, so I have a few options here. Option one, I go with something that already works with the plural nouns that I've already given, or I can do something gross. What do you think I should do, Dad?
Be your own person.
Pee.
Pee. Lovely. Person in room.
Dingle Mary.
Dingle Mary.
I'm so narcissistic.
Yep. Silly word.
Documenta.
That is not a silly word. That's a name. You need to come up with something else.
Documentabarbarism.
Stop it.
I'm too funny. Xenophobia. It has the letter X in it. That automatically makes it weird. That is super silly.
Noun?
Microphone.
Person in room.
Documentabarbarism.
Last name.
Martin. I've heard Martin as last names before.
That's right. There are last names that are Martin.
You did a sort of like a gesture for a moment.
Oh, no.
And I misread it.
Celebrity.
Simone.
Yes, bitch. Simone, work. Verb.
I'm finger waving, guys.
Verb.
Drag.
Okay. Plural noun.
Plural noun. Wigs.
Verb ending in ing.
Shading.
Shading. Shaving.
No, shading.
Shading.
Yeah. As in that color I don't have.
Color.
Red.
Part of the body, plural.
Arms.
Arms. Careful, don't shout into the microphone, please. Vehicle.
Bicycle.
That is a good vehicle. Occupation. Oh, plural. Occupation, plural.
So, like, I would do, like...
Just name an occupation and add an S.
All right, I'll add an occupation. A software designer.
Zzz. Plural noun.
Plural noun. God, I can't think.
Just look around the room and find a thing and say it. And you have to face
remotes.
Okay, try that again. I was speaking.
Okay. Glasses.
Glasses. Very good. This one is called the parade announcer. Shit! Welcome to the annual Pride Parade.
That works!
The weather forecast says sunny water bottles. But if you feel a drop of pee on your shoulder, don't fret. In the words of Dingleberry K. Xenophobia, without the microphone, there would be no rainbow. Look! There's documentabarbarism riding by on the Martin and Gumbel float, performing in drag as Simone and singing her hit. Ooh, I don't know. We saw what happened when Utica tried to do that.
Oh, no.
Singing her hit, I Want to Drag with Somebody. Next up, there's a group of LGBTQIA plus elders carrying homemade wigs. That's actually worse.
Yeah.
Reminding us that we must never stop shading for equality.
That works, too.
The shade for equality of it all. And check out the kids from the ballet school. They're covered in red body paint and dancing their arms out behind that bicycle.
Oh, no.
Filled with out and proud software designers.
Oh, no. That's very gruesome and disturbing.
It's a little weirder that there's a bicycle filled with out and proud software designers. So inspiring. It says that. So inspiring. This is what pride glasses are all about.
That's
funny. Boy, I'll say. Okay, you go ahead and pick one now.
Okay.
I'm having serious second thoughts about this game.
Yes, me too. All right, I found one. It's called...
Tell me afterward. You got something else.
You told me the title of yours.
No, yeah, after we did the words.
Oh, yeah, you did. Person in room.
Dingleberry.
Okay. Type of liquid.
Pee.
Wait a second. I think we're following a pattern. Plural noun.
Water bottle. Just kidding. Pillows.
Okay, great. First name.
Felicia.
Ooh. Verb past tense.
Farted.
It's my least favorite tense.
You like to live in the here and now?
Mm-hmm. Or? I'm always thinking ahead.
Not behind.
Not behind. Adjective.
Flatulent. Is that a word?
Yeah. technically. It means having the qualities of flatulence, right?
Sure.
So it's a very fart-centric word. Silly word.
Gerbil plats is my word.
Okay, gerbil plats. Occupation.
Software designer.
Okay. Software designer. A place.
The moon.
Ooh, we're getting spacey with this. First name.
Documenta.
Type of event.
So- Provincetown Bear Week.
Of course you choose.
Write it.
I'm writing it. There are so many prompts for this.
You can write P-Town if that's easier.
Thank you.
P-Town Bear Week, baby.
Sounds like you're...
Want to know. I've never been.
Aw. That's sad. Adjective.
Purple.
Okay. Part of the body, plural.
Rectums.
If you're with someone and they have several rectums, you should call 911.
Sounds like a party to me.
2 for the price of 1. Verb.
Imagine.
Plural noun.
Tray tables.
Type of food.
Ooh, type of food. Undercooked potatoes.
Ugh. Don't remind me.
Oh, sorry. Potato, not plural. Just potato.
Adjective.
Fecund.
How do you spell that?
F-E-C-U-N-D.
Hello and welcome everyone to our new ASMR podcast. all right.
Ooh, this is going to be amazing.
This is going to be interesting. There's one part in particular that I'm excited about. This is called My Pride Date.
Oh, boy.
I showed up at Dingle Mary's apartment, drenched in pee and almost blind, having forgotten my bifocal pillows at work.
Oh, no. No, no, no. This was a bad idea.
This is the bad future in store for us.
For who?
For us, our relationship.
I'm never showing up at your door soaked in pee and nearly blind. I can promise you that.
This Mad Lib says otherwise. You're late, Felicia said as they farted the door. Our date was off to a flatulent start. Sorry about that, I said. My day has been bazonka gerbil plats.
What?
Okay, so it's my day has been bazonka under, like, dash, silly word. And that's, like, where you're supposed to put the silly word.
Right, right.
Thankfully, that made my date laugh. I'm a software designer, I continued. I work with elderly patients down at the moon. One of them, Documenta.
This moving along, don't even say it. Don't even say it.
Documenta is old. Was jealous. Okay, let me start it where. One of them, Documenta, was jealous we were going to the P-Town Bear Week. They were at the very first Pride Parade back in 1970. Suddenly, my date's purple rectum lit up.
I believe the word is prolapse.
I didn't even, like, read that prior to this, so that was a surprise to me as well.
Purple Rectums. That was my band name in high school.
Welcome to Purple Rectums, our new ASMR podcast. Then we owe it to them to imagine, enjoy some delicious tray tables, and have a good time, right? My date said. Also, you've got a big undercooked potato stain on your shirt. I looked down, saw the giant smudge, and nodded. Happy Pride! We both laughed. Maybe this Pride date wasn't going to be so feckin' after all.
Fecund.
Fecund.
That sucked. We're never doing that again.
Guys, he just threw the Mad Libs across the room.
If you live in the greater New York area or have a good microphone and would like to share your story on Closet Practice, anonymously or not, message me on Twitter at DocumentaB on Instagram at documentabarbarism, online at documentabarbarism.com, or by email to buttstuff@documentabarbarism.com, with only one A in barbarism. That's DocumentTabarbarism. In the meantime, be sure to subscribe to House of Barbarism on your pod thingy of choice so you don't miss a single episode of Adventures in Gabysitting and Closet Practice every Monday, and Documenta and Son every Thursday.
Oh.
Oh my gosh. Hold still.
This is the squeakiest chair. I know, just in existence.
So don't move. Okay, welcome back, those of you that decided to stick around after that.
We appreciate you.
It's probably your mother, and that's about it. That's okay. Hi, Dingle Mommy.
Oh my gosh, that's so cute. Why have I never thought of that? Oh my gosh.
All right, so the main thing that we want to do on this podcast is talk about gay culture. Each time we're going to take a look at a different object of gay culture that we have examined or studied or experienced or something. Just because there's so much out there, there's so much to talk about, and we are both sort of learning how to be gay, how to be queer at this time, so we thought, why not dive in and see what gay culture has to offer for us?
Wait, I thought we were doing exclusively gay Mad Libs. I've been scammed.
Can you imagine?
That would be a very interesting four-episode podcast.
Then at the very least, we would know that we weren't the worst podcast of all time. At the very least, we would be second to worst. And the first thing that we get to talk about, we're very excited, is to talk about the Frank Moore exhibit that we went and saw at David's Werner as part of their Moore Life series. Frank Moore, who is not to be confused with the San Francisco-based disabled performance artist of the same name, was a painter. He was born in New York in 1953, grew up on Long Island. His family summered in the Adirondacks, where he fell in love with nature. He went to Yale. He discovered his love for art fairly young. He did the 9-week summer residency program at the Skowhegan School of Painting and Sculpture in Maine in 1973. So when he was 20, and then he also came back and was a visiting faculty artist there at Skowhegan in 1998. In 2019, they actually built the Frank Moore Studio in his honor. Did you know that?
I did not.
He spent a year at the Cité Internationale des Arts, an artist-in-residence center on the banks of the Seine in Paris near Notre Dame, where he learned French, and then moved to Soho in 1977, where he lived not all year round, but where he lived basically until he died. He was mostly a painter, but he also designed sets and costumes and made experimental films such as Beehive, which we watched.
Yes, we just watched it. It has a banging soundtrack, and that was the main draw I pulled from it.
How would you as we were watching it, we said it's kind of like a Pee-wee's Playhouse segment.
Oh, yeah, definitely. The set feels very Pee-wee's Playhouse. The way they're all, like, moving around, and then the fun, like, bee noises that they make.
Yeah, sure. They had that really great sort of, like, 80s, like, lo-fi energy where, you know, the sort of pre-digital, like, weird effects and animation, but just really sort of fun and energetic, really exciting. Apparently, they made it in his, like, loft apartment, which is crazy. It's available on YouTube if you want. And it was also later turned into a ballet. He bought a country home with his lover, Robert Fulps, in Deposit, New York, which is about 3 hours northwest of the city near the Pennsylvania border. And out there, he turned the barn into a studio. They lived there through, like, during the summers and into the fall, you know, which is a very sort of New York gay thing to do. But probably still, I don't really know. I'm not rich, but I assume that there are a lot of couples that still do that.
Unfortunately for us both, Documenta is not rich.
No, that's why you're going to be one day.
Exactly.
So he was described by his friend David Lieber, who's actually a partner at David's Werner. He described him the following in a speech. And it was so good, I felt like it was just worth including the whole quote. He said, "He was a naturalist and an urbanist, an organic gardener, a mycologist." That's like mushrooms and fungus and stuff. Oh, yeah. A forager, not just of mushrooms, but Frank was the first person I know to eat pea shoots and cultivate them along with watercress in his pond. It's a cute little detail there. Mm-hmm. He loved performers of all persuasions, poets, philosophers, the human genome, farm stands, and pancake breakfasts on airstrips, which, I don't know, that sounds like a rich person thing. I'm not really sure what that is.
Yeah, it really does.
Offbeat theater, foreign languages, including French, Russian, and Italian, snorkeling, dancing, baking, fashion, the stock market, medical journals, almanacs, Douglas Sirk films, seed catalogs, I Love Lucy reruns, the Adirondacks, the desert, beachcombing, minimalism, the Latin names of every plant on his property, Chinese food, National Geographic, electric lighting, camping, gossip, the telephone. He was alive every single minute of his 48 years, always open to new pleasures and experiences, close quote.
Was there anything he didn't like?
No, apparently he loved everything. I know, after a certain point, that list just sounds like he's just, like, naming things that exist.
Frank Moore liked food.
Frank Moore liked breathing, sitting, standing, jogging, not jogging, sleeping, not sleeping.
Being awake, being not awake.
Unfortunately, he tested positive for HIV in 1987. And soon thereafter became, so there's some discrepancy here. Some sites list him as a founding member of this group, but the site for the group itself doesn't have him listed as a founder, so I'm not really sure what's going on there. But he was at least an early member of a group called Visual AIDS, which was a pun that I didn't get until I started, like, saying it out loud. So it's Visual AIDS, which, according to them, is, quote, the only contemporary arts organization fully committed to raising AIDS awareness and creating dialogue around HIV issues today by producing and presenting visual art projects, exhibitions, public forums, and publications while assisting artists living with HIV/AIDS. As an early member, he was also one of the creators of the Red AIDS Ribbon, which was inspired by, have you seen those? You know, like the little...
Yeah.
Inspired by the yellow ribbons from the first Gulf War. I remember this. There were, like, everyone had, like, their yellow ribbon, which was a callback to, like, earlier wars of the 20th century, which were there to honor the people who died in war when I looked it up. There were less than 150 people who died in the first Gulf War.
Wow.
Americans, but these ribbons were everywhere. Like, everyone had them. So this group got together and thought, okay, well, more than 100,000 people have died of AIDS already. And, you know, no one's doing anything to commemorate that. So that's why they created this Red Ribbon Project. And that included, unfortunately, by that point, his lover, Robert, and many friends. It was impossible in the 80s to be gay and not know just, you know, tons of people who had died, who were sick. It was a good chance you had it yourself, of course. So he said his big breakthrough was when he began attempting to create a point-for-point correspondence between his life and the image. So, like, the things he loved most, things he hated the most, things he felt the most concerned about, and, you know, especially challenges to institutions, which, as we saw, like, especially medical.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
He became friends with Gianni Versace.
Ooh.
Who had and painted nearly 10 commissions for him. That was beginning in 1995. The way he described it, he said he didn't have a linear mind. He didn't work in series, which makes sense if you've seen any exhibits of his. You know, nothing. There are, like, themes and stuff that continue through each work, but there's nothing like a series. There's nothing like a sort of, like, coherent project.
Yeah, they really just took all the paintings they could, put them in two rooms, and was like, we're good.
He characterized his method as spirals through time and zips branching off of the spirals as though moving through space.
That is such an artist thing to say.
I know, but I like it because it really is, you know, I'm always fascinated about the way that we sort of map time on space and vice versa and things like that.
I want to explore what it means to be human in space and time, you know. I just...
So young and already so cynical.
I get it from my dad.
He loved nature. As that quote said in the video I watched, a video tribute of to him online that I watched, he's just, like, sitting on his porch talking, and all of a sudden he, like, dives off the edge of his porch, and he, like, comes up and on the end of his finger, and he's like, it's a staghorn beetle. And he was like a kid in a sandbox, like, just this, like, look of pure joy. Like, he literally, like, just fucking loved nature.
He also liked what are those?
Blinds?
Blinds, yes.
I don't get it.
He was just making a joke about how he loved everything.
Oh, he also loved not nature. He, in a talk he gave, he quotes Norman Rockwell as saying, "I would no sooner send a painting out into the world unframed than I would send my children to school undressed." He called the frame the most fun part of the work, saying it can enhance, contradict, or play games with the work, which clearly we saw and we'll talk about.
Absolutely.
And you also don't have to respond all the time. It's okay. Don't feel compelled. Just... Yeah, you're welcome to. Don't worry. People know you're here. They won't forget about you. His work is currently held by MoMA, the Whitney, and the New York Public Library. His personal papers are in the collection of NYU's Fales Library, which co-sponsored the exhibition Toxic Beauty with NYU's Gray Art Gallery in 2012 that also produced a monograph of the same name, which, from what I could tell, was out of print. But I don't know if it's being reprinted or if they just have more copies, but we were able to get our hands on a copy of that monograph at David Zwirner, which is exciting.
The name of that institution, like the NYU institution, Fales, that's a really bad name because it gives the wrong idea about the quality of the works that they have.
F-A-L-E-S.
Oh, that changes it. That changes it completely. It makes total sense now.
You just insulted a very rich family, probably, who will now never support us.
People from the future, we really need our Patreon money. We're in deep debt here, man.
Ever since we fucked with the Fales family, nothing has been the same.
They've come for us hard.
You do not want to fuck with the Fales.
Do not fuck with the Fales. And please support us in our time of need, guys. We need so much help.
As I said, we saw the exhibition as part of the More Life series at David Zwirner, which is in honor of the 40th anniversary of the CDC first reporting what would eventually be known as AIDS, but was identified at the time as merely PCP or pneumocystis carinii pneumonia. The series also has included work by Derek Jarman, Mark Morisseau, Marlon Riggs, and currently Ching-Ho Chung, Jesse Murray, who we'll be talking about as well, and then forthcoming is Hugh Steers, which I'm actually really excited about too.
I think I've heard his name. Who is he?
Hugh Steers?
Yeah.
It's because I've got a book of his right to your left. Yes,
it is right to my left. I've looked at it several days, for the record.
Another painter, same period. Really, actually, a lot of similar similar concerns, similar ideas about AIDS and stuff, but a lot more of his own personal, like, sort of body and person in his work. You'll see. Don't worry about it. We'll talk about it. The Frank Moore exhibit is still open until October 23rd. 2021.
Go see it. It's really cool.
It's very cool. And it's free.
Yeah, it's free.
That's in the 19th Street entrance, not the 20th. They've got a couple there. Okay. So there's so much, it's a small exhibit, but there are there's a number of works there. And Frank Moore did leave behind a number of works as well, which are in this monograph. But we wanted to talk about five specific paintings that we saw in the exhibit and sort of walk you through them and talk about how we felt about them, what we saw, things like that, okay? So, first of all, Dingle Mary is going to introduce them for us.
The first painting we're talking about today is Release from 1999. It is oil and silk skin on canvas mounted on wood.
I think that's silk screen.
It is silk screen. I swear, guys, I promise I'm smart. The painting is just a painting of an arm extending from all the way from the right to the left. Dotted across the arm, however, are these spots that kind of look like mud, would you say? And there are plants growing out of it, out of the spots. But there are a variety of butterflies throughout the image, and especially where the hand is at the left side, there are a large amount of butterflies. And there's a barcode in the bottom right.
Oh, yeah, the barcode. I forgot about that. That's interesting. So this I remember was the one that first, like, it was in the first room of the exhibit, but I remember this was the one that I just looked at and could not get enough of. Like, so it reminded me, yeah, that was a great description you gave. It reminded me kind of that, the Michael Jordan wings poster from the 90s, but just like half of it. Because did I ever tell you about that poster or did we talk about it?
I think you mentioned it briefly.
So it was this poster that like everyone had in their bedroom in the mid 90s where it was just It was long like this, so it was long and narrow and horizontal, but it was just Michael Jordan stretching his arms out. You know, and it's made his arms like look sort of impossibly long, and it was when he was like at the height of his fame.
It's like the leg in the Ready Player One poster being twice his height.
Yes, totally. But so this one is really astonishing, yes, for the way, I mean, the arm is like unnaturally long, like clearly. Yeah. Like it's not just an illusion, like it is painted, it's like too long, it's like stretched out.
It's like the arm of Dhalsim from Street Fighter, if anyone gets that reference. Shout-outs to you. Please support us on our future Patreon.
We should just start calling the podcast Future Patreon. But yeah, so I remember, it doesn't really reprint it here in the monograph. It doesn't really capture it. But just the sense of motion, just the way you start at the right, and just the way how every brush stroke, you can sort of see that every brush stroke is right to left, the way it draws your eye with that motion. You feel it, and then your eye like tears across the image, and then at the end of the image, the hand is sort of open, and it's like there's some air, something coming out. You know, I mean, it's called release. And then you noticed that these spots had similarity to. Do you remember that?
Yeah, when I first saw them, they reminded me very much of like the swollen lymph nodes that AIDS patients would usually have.
So it wasn't swollen lymph nodes so much as the Kaposi's sarcoma, right? Isn't that what it was?
I think.
Yeah. So that's what these looks like. The spots that are often indicative of Kaposi's sarcoma.
Yeah.
That was, you know, back then sort of a surefire indicator. That you had AIDS. So it's interesting because it's these plants are like growing out of the arm. So at once it's an image of like growth and new life, but then also like death and decay and destruction. Anything else you want to say about release?
Not particularly. I agree with what you said. I thought the duality of life and death is interesting. I almost feel almost as if it is like a commentary on the idea of death bringing life because they're growing out of the spots that indicate like AIDS and like the imminent death, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was specifically that those spots are what's like growing plants.
Okay, cool. Interesting. That's great. All right, what's next?
Next, we have Gulliver Awake from 1994 to 1995. It is oil on canvas mounted on wood. So this painting, the most prominent feature is the giant special police officer who is being tied down by ropes to medicine. The whole landscape, it's all pills, various pills. Mainly they are the circular pills. I don't know. Is there like a special name for circular pills?
Yes, but I can't think of it right now.
Awesome. If anyone knows, comment it.
Comment below.
like, comment, and subscribe. Around the giant special policeman.
I love a giant special policeman.
Special policeman. There are a bunch of smaller people. He is tied down with ropes. I think I already said that. Some of which are being held by the people and others that are just pinned to the pills. It feels very much like a Where's Waldo picture.
Yeah, I think we were calling it like Where's Gay Waldo.
Yeah, because there's just so much going on. Some of the people here are flower people. There's just like a bunch of different like jobs represented here. There's a stripper on his right shoe who is holding one of the ropes like a, what is it called on a horse?
Like a harness?
Like a harness, I guess.
I'm not sure if that's a stripper or just like a leather daddy.
Yeah, it's probably just a leather daddy. Strewn throughout are various condoms, whether they're in their package or used. Funny part is there are two men in the top right who have lab coats on, but they are open. They are full. They are naked beyond that and just have undies on. And they are moving a giant syringe towards the direction of his butt.
That's true. They are sort of, well, they're far away, but sort of aiming towards the butt, aren't they? Okay, that's great. Yeah. So this is interesting because, partially because the cop is hot, which is, you know, I mean, that's a common, you know, we love, thanks to Tom of Finland, we do love a man in uniform, a very sort of problematic gay desire. But nonetheless, that's what it is.
Can I share who I think he looks like?
Sure.
He kind of looks like the guy who plays Ferris Bueller to me.
You think he looks like Matthew Broderick?
A little bit.
Yeah, but you have a partial face blindness.
I have partial face blindness, probably.
That is very interesting. I am not getting Matthew Broderick from that. But hey, whatever floats your boat.
Or maybe the guy from, like, the main kid from Back to the Future.
Michael J. Fox?
Yeah.
Okay, I can see that.
That might be who I was thinking maybe. Of.
Yeah, he's definitely sort of young, white. This is another one that really mixes death and life. The death, you know, of course, is the pills and the hospital and the sickness. But then you've got the flower people, like you said. But then also the sort of sexual implements. You've got the condoms, like you said. The handcuffs, which are both sort of, you know, which are sexual, of course.
Yes. Another point is that on his left shoe, there is a shirtless man in blue jeans licking his shoe.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So that's very sexual.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. You got some leather play.
Anything slightly obscene to me is sexual.
Well, you are a teenager.
Yeah, exactly.
And then also this very prominent butt plug.
Oh, I thought that was a used condom.
No. I'm very happy that you don't know what those things are, just because you had, you know, it means you're still young, you're still my baby, and we don't have to worry about that. But I will make sure before you go out in the world that you do know what they are. But yeah, so that's a butt plug. Do you know what those are?
I assume they plug butts.
Very good. Yeah, I mean, it's
context clues.
It's for sexual use, obviously, but it's like to stimulate the prostate to, you know, sort of get the nerves excited down there. And you also got KY jelly, so you got lube there too. So again, sex, death, yeah, a little more S&M, but of course all wrapped up in his general preoccupations with sickness and AIDS and all of that. Mm. Awesome. Where's Gay Waldo? No, that wasn't a real question.
Top left.
Okay, moving right along. What's next, Dingleberry?
Up next is Debutantes from 1992. It is oil and silk skin on canvas mounted on wood in artist's frame, which is barbed wire and wood.
I think this one is also silk screen as well.
English is a hard language, guys.
So this one, I remember this one really, we sort of spent some time with in the exhibit because it's pretty disturbing.
It's very disturbing.
Go ahead and tell us what it is that you see in the painting Debutantes, 1992 oil and silk screen on canvas mounted on wood.
One of the most prominent parts is a statue of a woman impaled through their butt up through their shoulder. There's like leaves growing on it. This statue is mounted on a pill again.
Oh yeah, you're right. I think you pointed that out to me last time too.
In the bottom left, there's another pill and there is this strange object. We can't tell what it is, but it appeared in a couple of other of his paintings. Again, on a pill surrounded by those flowers.
So when we saw the exhibit, we didn't know what it was. I have since learned what that object is.
Oh,
would you like to hear?
I would like to hear what this is.
We were confused. We didn't know what it was. I was like, is that like a lamp or like a light bulb or a sprinkler or something? So then I was at New York Film Festival watching the new Paul Verhoeven film, Benedetta. And I discovered what that is and what it's used for. Hmm. It's called the Pear of Anguish.
That is like such a medieval torture device name. It's a medieval torture device, isn't it?
It sure is.
Great.
Yep. So it would be inserted into the mouth, rectum, or vagina. And then as you can see, it has a screw. So it goes in and then the screw opens the three panels slowly. Yeah. That scene was pretty intense. I mean, you know, they cut away obviously, but the screams and so, I mean, you can imagine just how that would just tear.
That's really
everything.
Disgusting.
Yes. So this one is very full of these sort of medieval torture implements, these torture devices. In the back, there's another one similar to how the woman in the front, it could be a woman, I'm not exactly sure, is spiked, but they're doing it to a person upside down and ready to drive the spike in.
Yes.
But then what is it? This is, to me, what makes the picture most disturbing.
What's really interesting is that another prominent feature is a young white boy and a young black boy. They're walking a terrier, I guess, but they're like looking at these imagery and they have like, and they're like pointing at the anal torture device. And then in the back, there's also a young white girl and a young black girl.
On a tricycle.
On a tricycle.
Looking at the other.
Looking at the other statue.
And then also there's another structure back here in the top left where some sort of pointed pyramidal thing going into someone's anus, someone who's tied up or something.
Yeah.
But see, so these images seem to be, they don't seem to be like things he drew himself. They seem to be.
Really?
I don't know. Do you think so?
I thought they were drawn on.
The style of them sort of looks older.
The painting that's in the painting within a painting, that does look like it was pasted on. I don't think that was drawn by him, though.
So also it's like a grassy, like kind of a lovely scene here. There's like a bricked, like paved walkway that the children are standing on. The girls are riding their tricycle on. But then if you look at the back,
This area is fenced in at the top with barbed wire. And spaced throughout this fence are pictures of the pink triangle.
Right. So that, of course, calls to mind, like, the Holocaust. Yeah. You know, concentration camps, things like that. So it's really – what makes this one so interesting is that it doesn't – like, it's very vivid, very violent, very unsettling. But it doesn't sort of wallow in that. You know, it's not really prurient in any way, even though it's the
What does that word mean? Prurient?
Prurient? I don't know. You know I can use words, but I never know how to define them. Prurient, like, sort of like vulgar for vulgarity's sake.
Oh, maybe. Interesting. I know a lot of words, but I have no idea how to pronounce them because I just read them in books.
That's true. Don't worry, the listeners will catch on soon enough. So, I don't know. This one, to me, was one of the most disturbing. How did it make you feel?
Interesting. To me, I thought it was like, not necessarily inspiring, but I don't think it was disturbing. I thought it was like what it is this cruelty like preserved as like an historical monument for people to see. Clearly, this is a better time in which, you know, cross-raced friendships are normal, clearly. And I think it is kind of weird that they're little kids, but I do believe that I saw it as a sign of better times where this isn't like always happening. Rather, this is a memento of the past.
Oh, interesting. So then what do you make then of the fact that the sort of plinth that the torture, that the giant spike is on, or that the pair of anguish is sitting on, is probably like the medicine that he was taking for AIDS?
I mean, I think Frank Moore went into his painting career and was like, everything I do must have one AIDS pill in it somewhere.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, that's, yes, that's a bit flippant, though. I mean, why, though? Don't you think? To me,
I mean, as you were saying, AIDS was omnipresent in his life and a lot of gay life in the 80s, you know? I mean, totally. This was in 1992, but that's,
yeah, but I mean, he was, you know, he was diagnosed in 87, and by, you know, the sort of first AIDS, like, drug cocktail wasn't even introduced until for 4 years after this painting, you know, so it was still very much a death sentence, you know. Yeah. The AZT was around, but, you know, that had its own issues, and not everyone had access to it. So to me, it seems to almost be drawing some sort of connection between AIDS and the way the government had ignored it, the way that the society sort of viewed gay men, especially, as disposable, as sort of as a contemporary version of this same type of torture in which homosexuals were tortured, persecuted, and killed, maybe in centuries past.
Yeah, I think I agree. That makes sense to me.
Either way, it's fucked.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting that the light, I was trying to sort of trace the light source. You don't see the source of light, but it seems to be coming from, it seems like it's almost like sunset or early morning, don't you think?
No, yeah, definitely. I feel like you can see the, like, sun horizon, I think. What is it called when you, like, Because it's like, you don't actually see the sun, but you do see its like light coming over like hills and mountains.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's a word for it.
I think it's called the Terminator, but I could be
wrong. Let us know below in the comments.
Like, comment, and subscribe.
The Terminator?
No, I'm serious. I read this in a book, What If? This is a science book. The point is, I read this in a book, and I'm pretty sure that the line in which day and night changes is called the Terminator.
Cool. I hope that's true, and even if it's not, in my mind, it is true. It is Terminator time. Okay, great. Well, that's a fun and delightful painting.
I forgot about this one. Guys, I forgot about this one.
I thought we should end on a maybe lighter note with Lady Bunny and Lady Bunny's fat pink dick. What painting are we looking at? Dingle.
So, this painting is called Birth of Venus. It is from 1993. It is oil and silk screen.
Yeah. Finally got it. Work, yes, work, silk screen, work.
On linen mounted on wood in antique gilded frame. It is a beach scene. There's a lot of trash, like
flotsam.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, it washed up.
It washed up.
Washed up on the beach.
A lot of like syringes and more AIDS imagery. There are jellyfish in the water, and they have.
Okay, I feel like you're really burying the lead on this one.
There's a purse. It has stuff coming out of it. Oh yeah, and there is a naked lady bunny laying in a sexual pose across the beach, and their left leg just turns into a giant tentacle, which just twirls off the sea into the sea.
Yeah, so this one is wild. So Birth of Venus obviously calls to mind that famous, the very famous Birth of Venus painting where she's standing in the giant oyster shell, clam shell, whatever, you know. But yeah, I really don't know what to make of this one beyond the fact that it's just really fucking cool because it's Lady Bunny. And just, you know, there, I mean, I don't know if that's actually a representation of Lady Bunny's dick or if it's just like a random dick.
I hadn't noticed that there was a dick in this painting, and now I can't stop staring at it.
Well, it's also, it's not just lying there. It's also like wrapped very suggestively in seaweed and
like
bubbles, or I don't know what that is.
I think it's the like. Oh, I mean, we do see a similar design at, like, the edge of the water. So, yeah, I do think it is, like, bubbles or sea spray, sea foam
or something. So, yeah, so it's interesting because on the one hand, it's really sort of playful and funny because it's, like, Lady Bunny there in full beat and full wig.
Yeah.
But, like
full
looking...
full drag.
Looking suggestive and then just sort of boy body from the leg, from the neck down. Oh, wait, no, except she's got a full set of long pink nails on, too.
That is a very important detail.
Yeah. But, and then, yes, it's all the other things you said, too, right? There's, like, the garbage washed up on the sea. There's the syringes. There's a tuna can.
With a crab sitting on top of it.
One thing that we haven't really talked about much, because we haven't looked at a lot of environmental ones for this episode, is his sort of obsession with the environment and with, you know, mankind's place in the environment. Yeah. You know, he talked a lot about how... these are things were always connected, the death, the destruction of the environment and the destruction of man, how it was, they were sort of cyclical and causing each other.
Mm.
So that's, I mean, so this is just a really brief view at some of the paintings that we saw and really loved. There's so much more. There were ones with wild frames. There's one with that, you know, frames with antlers, that one carved wood frame that looked, couldn't tell what the material was.
Yeah. It looks like this pillow, but it looks like if you push it, it will, like, be a pillow.
We wanted so badly. Like, we got as close as we could to it with the docent, like, staring us down. He knew what we wanted.
I was just trying to reason with myself. There aren't ropes. That means we can touch it, right? They're fine with it.
Very tactile, very, very almost interactive in a way. Or it feels like you want to interact with it, right?
Yeah, like, the frames is, like, such an important detail of the paintings as well. I don't think I've done a great job of explaining the frames, but they are definitely a major part.
Well, we also didn't talk about any of the ones with the sort of crazier frames, like the books. There's a lot where he chopped up books.
Yeah.
You can look at more. You can see more in the show notes. We've got links to to the exhibit. You can just do a Google search for his images. You can get your hands on this book, Toxic Beauty. So before we wrap up, Frank Moore, real quick, we're doing this podcast for a lot of reasons, but most importantly, it's in a sense it's not my gift to you, because that would be really narcissistic of me to believe that my words can be a gift to anybody.
That would be well in line for Dad.
But more just based on the understanding that, like David Halperin and a lot of other people have said, that gayness, queerness, it's not just a sexual identity. It's not just a gender identity. It's a cultural identity as well. And so I feel like it's through culture that we can really sort of come to understand gayness, queerness, whatever it means. So I just wanted to ask you before we wrap up, looking at these, at the Frank Moore paintings, visiting the exhibition like we did, what does gayness or queerness look like to you through his paintings?
Lady Bunny's dick. No, I think I felt a lot that like queerness was sort of rooted in survival, like survival through trials, right? Like AIDS, that's omnipresent in his work. But throughout there, it is still like moments of like success almost. Like here, Lady Buddy, she's feeling her oats.
She is
herself and no one else can tell her otherwise. And in debutantes, that is a sign of a better time, where that is a historical monument, not the present. Like, that is like a better world where people can like live more freely almost. I feel like that is certainly a message I got through in his paintings.
Does his work make you excited to be queer or scared?
A mix of both. Because, he really hammers the idea of AIDS. that's a big one. But also, all of his paintings are, like, fun to look at. They're all very colorful. They're all very fun. Like in Gulliver Awake, I'm sorry. There's just so many, like, fun little details that it's fun to, like, look at it and, like, try and figure out what's happening everywhere. And, of course, there's a lot of sexual imagery.
Which is always fun.
Which is always fun. I think it's both a mix, And I think that's just the way it's going to be with any new experience, right? It's going to be a mix of excitement of doing the task and doing not the task. That makes it sound like it's an ordeal I have to go through. But of experiencing the experience, I guess. But also, like, nervousness. Like, whenever I do anything that's slightly out of my comfort zone, I'm like, I can't do this, Daddy. Please don't make me do this. And then I'm always, like, down with it for the rest of my life afterwards,
All right, let's take a break.
Bye.
Okay, welcome back. For our final segment, we are going to do what we call AMAG. Ask Me Anything Gay. So as if you listen to Adventures in Gaybysitting, you'll know that I myself am only pretty recently out of the closet. There's a lot I'm still learning, a lot I'm still figuring out. But there are maybe still be some things that I know, some things that I can do or say to maybe help Dingle.
Supposedly, with age comes wisdom.
It's very true. And so with that in mind, it's a chance for Dingle to ask me one question, ask me anything. And I mostly will probably answer anything, but we'll see. So with that in mind, go ahead.
It's a crapshoot. So we're coming out of the coronavirus pandemic. Do you guys remember that? That was a real nuisance. And I'm finally going back to in-person school. I've been trying to make a lot of friends, as you know. And I'm often looking out for queer friends because they're just going to be better. No, I'm sorry. That's not true. That's not my opinion.
No, it is. You're right.
But I've found myself constantly being unsure of how to approach the subject of queerness. So my question is, what is the nice way of asking someone if they're queer? Do you just walk up to them and be like, hello, are you gay in any way? Or what's up with that?
I would say the nice way to do it is to not do it. I don't think, I mean, it's really, I mean, you know, advertise. If you make it clear that you're, you know, that you're, I mean, because you consider yourself basically out, right?
Yeah, I'm very queer.
You are a queer beast. that's really interesting because, you know, you can kind of, we do kind of, it's not necessarily gaydar, but we do sometimes have a sixth sense that you develop over time. You can just sort of tell whether it's through sort of prolonged eye contact or just something is a little bit different, you know?
Yeah, I've had that experience with a girl in my gym class for sure. It was partially just like, you know, I could tell that they were different, like you're saying. And also they had a drawstring bag that was just the gay flag.
Pride flag?
It was the pride flag. So that's...
So it's pretty obvious.
It's pretty obvious. My gaydar isn't broken. It's just really, really bad.
No, it's not bad. It's just you're learning, you know. You haven't exercised it too much, especially because you haven't been out in the world since you've sort of had these realizations about your identity. So I'd say use your... You can sort of act as a magnet. You know, you can, by making it clear, by making it apparent that you're like a safe space, that you're queer, I think it will just sort of, you will discover each other.
Yeah, that's sort of been my strategy. If I detect even a little bit, I'll often ask, are you in the GSA? That's a question I've been asking, the Gender Sexuality Alliance.
Interesting. So, yeah, that can work. That can also backfire. You never know. I mean, just be patient. You know, it's not so important that you know right away. I get it that, you know, you're back in the world and you want to be with people and you want to make friends. I'm the same way. I'm fine trying to find my community, you know. I am trying to build that, too, without having much history or experience. So mostly just breathe, just be your authentic self.
But I need queer friends.
And it will happen. You don't need to push it. Don't force it. Just be your wonderful gay ass self. And also, you know, at the same time too, I think, yes, you do need friends. You do need community, but you also need to be you and you need to be confident and comfortable with who you are. You need to be fine with yourself. You need to be able to be alone. You need to be able to have that sort of center, develop that center. Because if you're the person who just needs these other people, these friends to exist or to have a sense of meaning or pride or, you know, self-understanding, then that's just fucking draining. Then you're like a succubus, you know?
Yeah.
And that energy gets real toxic real quick and can become real codependent. So, yeah, just – I think the important thing is to – I guess I already said it. Breathe. Be yourself. Don't push things. You are fine as you are. And you will find your community. You will find your people. Anything else you want to say to our listener at home?
Bye, Mom. I love you. Have fun at work.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening. See you next time. This has been another House of Barbarism podcast. Written, recorded, edited, and produced by Document of Barbarism. Your friendly neighborhood mountain man fairy princess. Remember, there is no document of civilization which is not, at the same time, a documenta barbarism. Mwah.